Final Furlong podcast is brought to you in association with attheraces.com, the ultimate resource for racing fans.
Thank you for downloading the Final Furlong podcast. I'm Amos Kennedy, alongside At The Races pundit Mr. Kevin Blake.
Hello!
How the hell are you, my friend?
Good. Alive.
New top hat and tails for this year?
No.
Right, Peter T. Fornital from one of the best American racing podcasts. And I'm not just saying that because Kevin and I make a cameo appearance on that show, but you really should be listening to In the Money Players Podcast, which is absolutely fantastic. And you are on Sky Sports Racing for the entire week. For the first time, Sky Sports Racing broadcasts every single race from Royal Ascot live. I'm sure you've already seen the promos in Sky Sports Main Event and Sky One, Sky Atlantic even. But it's fantastic to see. And it's going to be a mighty, mighty week. And you're going to have a lot to talk about. But let's steal your insight right now. But we are going to begin, I have to say, with Kevin Blake. Sunday Sovereign is entered for the Norfolk Stakes as we record this podcast. He's currently around about 4-1 at the races. There's then Mavin at 6-1 and as fast at 7s. And we can completely ignore Monarch of Egypt because in your stable tour with Aidan O'Brien for attheraces.com, Aidan O'Brien confirmed he will be going for the Railway Stakes and not Royal Ascot. So, my man, as we look ahead to day 3, the opening juvenile race, Group 2, over the 5 furlongs on what should be, we hope, good to fast ground, what is your most likely bet at this stage?
It's Bombproof. We mentioned them briefly on the day 1 podcast as being the horse who beat my selection for the Coventry Monoski. And, you know, the Windsor Castle is a potential for him as well. He'll be entered in both, but I just wouldn't be at all surprised if they go for the Norfolk. And I hope to silence that phone. And I hope they go for the Norfolk.
Apologies, Siri has been going a bit nuts with updates. Continue on, Kevin.
We told you to silence the phone before we went live.
Apologies, everybody. Keep going, Kevin.
It's a funny thing, you know, the Norfolk is a Group 2 and the Windsor Castle is a listed race, but it's not unheard of for the Norfolk to be nearly an easier race to win than the Windsor Castle. The Windsor Castle tends to have a massive field. The Norfolk is a little bit more select. And if he was mine, I'd definitely go for the Norfolk, for sure. Really liked his debut. Beat Monoski, as mentioned, who came out and won his next start by 6 lengths. Summer Sands was nearly 4 lengths back in third. He came out and won at Beverly at the weekend. And Sun Power, who was nearly 7 lengths back in fifth, came out and won next time as well. So it looks like very warm form. On the clock, it was electric. Bombproof put up closing sectionals that would set your eyes on fire if you looked at it in the wrong circumstances. And I think he's just a very fast 2-year-old that really knows what he's doing. He's very forward, very precocious. You know, Jeremy Nasida, this could be a dream exit from the training ranks for him. He's going to be one of 2 runners for him during the week. And I just really like the horse. I really like the horse. I hope to go for the Norfolk. He's like 12-1. He'll certainly be half that and probably shorter if he does go here. Because I suspect this race will chop off just a little bit and he'll be amongst the leading fancies, I strongly suspect. So I hope he goes here and I'd very much be with him if he does.
Okay, there is an interesting postscript as we look at Royal Ascot, because we were talking about the Coventry with Peter for our day one preview. And through looking at that race, you see that actually a lot of the horses that Jeremy Nasida has in his care have already been rehoused. We knew that this was going to be his final outing, but we weren't entirely certain that, you know, what was going to happen to the others. Charlie Fellows seems to be a big beneficiary of this. Susan Roy has sent a good number to him by the looks of things. She's been essentially his main backer for quite some time, but it's unusual circumstances for Jeremy Nasida to be bowing out, for any trainer to be retiring at this stage. But if Bombproof was to go and finish up his career by winning this race, well, it would be some farewell for a trainer of immense talent. Pop quiz, hot shot. When was the last Group 1? In what year did Jeremy Nasida the last win at Group 1? I will also include Grade 1s.
Ooh, oh, you've given that away
clue?
There. Wilco? No? No.
Go on.
More recent than that. So it's obviously a grade one. I'm actually cheating here, and if what I'm cheating is correct, there's no one would ever get that.
Don't Google it. Did you Google it?
I think I'm looking at it here, but I think that was very unreasonable. No one would ever get that correct if I'm looking at the same answer as you are.
Peter T. Fornatel, what was the last year that Jeremy Nasita trained a winner and be honourable and ethical?
Wilco is the name that popped to mind, that Breeders' Cup Juvenile, but that was all the way back in 2004, and I think you would have copped to it if it was that one. So I think I'm drawing a blank here.
2010.
Yeah, if you put this up as a quiz question, it's a 1%er. Not many people are getting this right.
I'm saying this now, and you should remember this for the Final Furlong Podcast Christmas quiz, because I'm sure it'll turn up. Name the last winner that Jeremy Nasita trained and year. 2010.
Really?
Yeah. What do you have?
You're going with San Frontieres.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's incorrect, my friend.
Oh, what are you saying?
A horse called Western Aristocrat in the Jamaica Handicap Grade 1.
Jesus Christ.
In 2011.
Oh. I gave it to you. I thought I was doing a trick question, and I reversed it on myself. No!
That's too funny.
I thought I was...
because nobody would ever get that right.
I thought I was reverse engineering it. I was thought I was doing a trick question on you. This will really plague him now if I say that. Oh,
Western,
dang it.
Western Aristocrat, my God.
I should have gotten that, to be fair.
You should. You're our international racing expert. You absolutely should have. Are you 100% sure about that, Kev?
Yes, as long as the database I'm looking at is correct, yeah.
Okay, all right. I'm sticking with 2010, and it will be a bone of contention for the Christmas quiz. But have a look at the entries for some of the races during the week, particularly for Susan Roy, because they've already gone. They've left the yard already. So you're going to go with the dream ending, so for Jeremy Nasita's career, with Bombproof, who, as I see right now and at the races, is available at 12s as a big price. And hopefully that is the race he's going to go for. And you make a good point. The Windsor Castle does tend to be as equally, if not even more, competitive. We're going to have the Wesley Ward invasion, as is now traditional. One of his big guns, unfortunately, is out of the Queen Mary, but he still has quite a team, Peter T. Fornatel, including Anna's Fast. Is this going to be her target?
I'm not sure. He's been very, even now, they did their works. They talked to the press again this morning, and he's being very coy about where the fillies are going to end up. The one I know, well, I say I know, the one I'm pretty sure is going to run in the Norfolk, and it makes a lot of sense, and I like, is Maven. This is from the first crop of American Pharaoh. So that's a potential really important implications in the breeding market for Maven to go there. They passed on running in a dirt spot for Maven during the Belmont Stakes Festival, where the horse would have been 4-5, and they decided not to go there and to run on the turf at Ascot instead. I think they're doing this. I think there's a method to the seeming madness, and I think they think that the horse is not only going to run well, but this could be a great marketing tool when it comes to their new stallion, American Pharaoh. I am, and the numbers are good for the horse. The dirt race came back with a good figure, finished up well, which isn't something you always see with these young wards. A lot of times they just blitz and they hang on. This horse finished with something left in the tank, it appeared to me, and the subsequent workout on turf looked really good. So Maven looks square to me at 6-1. Not sure, he probably will have something else end up here, whether it's Anna's Fast or Chili Petten. We're going to have to wait and see till we get a little bit closer. But regardless, it's Maven for me in the Norfolk from here.
And we know by now that 5 furlongs at Royal Ascot for Wesley Ward is just a gold mine. I mean, that's where he's really cleaned up in recent years. So is Maven the first ever winner by American Pharaoh, by the way, off the top of my head?
I think Monarch of Egypt, who was originally being pointed for this race, was maybe the day before or a couple of days before, but they're both among the first Pharaoh winners. I was really hoping this was going to end up being a clash of the Pharaoh babies and was disappointed hear about Monarch of Egypt being rerouted.
I will challenge that and make myself look an idiot again, and, well, I normally do, and be wrong and say that Maven won first, and then that the first Northern Hemisphere winner was well, the first European winner was Monarch of Egypt. But I'm willing to be corrected on that. 6-1 is the price about Maven. If he does go here, that's too big in your mind.
I think so. I mean, based on Ward's record in the race and the pedigree here, it's interesting. Ward, this is year number 11, and it just seems like bloodline-wise, they're getting better and better. And again, I really like the fact that this one wasn't just a tactical advantage of, okay, this one can go faster than others. I think the European market is catching up in some ways in terms of the early speed. The fact that this one still packed a little bit of a punch in the lane, I think Maven's going to take a lot of beating.
Okay. Lack of experience doesn't apply at all when it comes to Wesley Ward's horses. It was interesting. He was doing an interview. I apologize. I'm not sure where. It could have been TVG recently, where he was saying that the reason he ended up at Royal Ascot was by pure accident. He was just looking somewhere eastbound to run his horses. And he went, amazing. He was quite intimidated and said, I'll roll the dice and see how we get on. And now he's got Coolmore as one of his principal owners there. The whole thing has transformed massively for him, and long may it continue, because he adds a real sense of panache and a sense of just general excitement when you even see him in the parade ring beforehand. It's just like the guy's electric, and his horses have been even more electric on the track. So we'll see what Maven can do. That's going to be your selection. Kev, is there anything else in this race aside from Bomb Proof that you would like to highlight before we move on?
Oh, you'd have to give a shout to Sunday Sovereign as well, to be fair. You know, best of the Irish on paper, you'd have to say, represents Paddy Toomey, you know, who has had a horse run very, a 2-year-old run very well at Royal Ascot in the past. It should be remembered. Van der Decken, who won at Akura first time out and was subsequently bought by Godolphin and ran in the Coventry for Paddy, and was only, I think he was fifth behind Caravaggio. So he's not he might not be a familiar name to everyone, especially those on the British side of the Irish Sea, but he's a very serious operator, and he has been to Ascot before with a 2-year-old. So you'd have to give him a shout. He was very good at the Curragh. He beat Arizona in great style, you'd have to say, and went to Tipperary and had a relatively simple task on paper, but did it in great style on ground that had turned soft. I don't think fast ground, if it is fast ground, should be a big problem for him. I think he'll be just fine. And he's the standard setter, I think it's fair to say, based on those two wins, and looks to have very solid prospects.
And Kevin, in your stable tour with him, you were talking about the fact that he's opened up his stable now, that he's doing a little bit more. So you've mentioned the fact that Godolphin have bought a horse there before from him, but he's really going for it this season, and he's shown himself to be a very, very talented trainer. He's had two horses placed in the guineas, the 1,000 guineas and the 2,000 guineas in Ireland this season. He's a trainer who is only improving, and this is probably going to be his biggest year. And with King Power coming in to buy this horse, a 30,000 euro yearling, I think he was 14,000 as a foal, you can be damn sure he's gone for a whole lot more now. This is a very exciting time for him, and he's definitely a trainer to keep an eye on.
Oh, he's a fabulous horseman. You know, I've known Paddy for over 10 years. Like as I was saying on the podcast the other day, I'm literally looking out at his gallop here out my office window right now, like he's a neighbor of mine. Very such a sharp fella on any aspect of racing now, and just with a wonderful reputation as a horseman. You know, in recent years, you know, he'd be pre-training horses for the likes of William Haggis and Sir Mark Prescott, and when you have operators like that willing to send their horses to Ireland just to be pre-trained by Paddy, it says a lot about the regard he's held in. You know, his record of the sales is exceptional, you know, whether it was pin-hooking foals to yearlings or yearlings to breezers. And he made a very, very ballsy move, you know, by essentially focusing on the training, because as everyone knows, it's a really difficult game no matter where you are, but in Ireland in particular, it's very, very difficult to break into the upper echelons of the table, and he's on his way. You know, he has 50, 60 horses there at the minute, getting a great bunch of owners involved, and he's getting results in a big way. So yeah, the future is very bright for Paddy, And this fella will be a big focus point for him next week, clearly, and going forward after that as well, you'd imagine.
And he will likely be favoured in the race unless that sea of Wesley Ward money comes from Maven, the pick of the horses for Peter T. Fornatel. Just because you're only on with us for day three, Peter, we've also previewed day one with us. In terms of Wesley's horses for the rest of the week, who really interests you? Because this is a decent team he's bringing over this year.
The two best from what I've seen and based on numbers in the USA are Nyabeth, who I think is going to go into the Albany. So that's sort of uncharted territory in a way in terms of I think that's the one that he hasn't won. And going six furlongs, I think he wants to prove that he can do it. And I think Nyabeth gives him a real chance to do just that. Kimari ran a really big speed figure as well, and it looks like she's going to be heading to the Queen Mary. Some decent prices around for Kimari still. So I'm going to be looking to bet those three, Maven, Nyabeth, and Kimari, and then we'll see what happens from there. But those seem, I'm guessing those have the best chances. But as we've seen in the past with the Ward team, everything he sends out has a chance. So you want to at least consider them.
Absolutely. I mean, we have discussed Kimari already for Wesley Ward on our day two preview with Rory DeLargy and with Vanessa Royal, which you can listen to whenever you want and for as long as you want. Don't believe I have to do this. Kevin Blake was right. Corey Nakatani, Jeremy Nasita, 2011, Belmont Park, Jamaica Handicap. Jesus Christ. I boxed myself in. Why did I think 2010?
Damn it!
Remember that for the Final Furlong Podcast Christmas quiz, which shall return later in the year. Oh, dear. Anyway, we're off to the Ribblesdale Stakes, and we'll start with you, my good friend, Peter T. Fornatel. We've got a number of very interesting horses entered here. We know, of course, that Pink Dogwood, who is still priced up by some bookmakers, does not run, thanks to Aidan O'Brien's stable tour with Kevin Blake on attheraces.com. So Queen Power is heading the betting for King Power Racing. The retained jockey shall be on board Sylvester D'Souza for Sir Michael Stout. She heads the betting around about the 3-1 mark right now on At The Races. You've then got Medina at 5-1, who was disappointing, you have to say, in the Oaks. Manuel De Vega. We've got Entitle, Laverdon's Blue. And Francanella may very well turn up for William Haggis. We'll have to wait and see. Your thoughts on the race, Peter T. Fornatel?
There's definitely a lot of ways you can go in here, but I give preference right now to Entitle. The obvious, incredible pedigree angle. But this is one who's just improving and looking like there might be more room for improvement still. And I love the fact that she was held out of the Oaks, presumably with this spot in mind and the thought that Epsom wouldn't suit. I think the price looks pretty enticing. I definitely want your guys' opinion to make sure I'm not jumping into a pool that doesn't have any water in it. But Enable's half-sister Entitle is the one for me in the Ribblesdale.
No, absolutely. I thought she ran a stormer in the Museadora for one so inexperienced. Just showed that inexperience through the race, but produced a very good finishing effort. The form got a reasonable push in the right direction with Frank Alina running quite well in the Oaks for one so inexperienced. And then looked at the scope for further improvement there, not just natural improvement, but improvement for this longer trip as well. Is very much there. So yeah, in a Ribblesdale now that doesn't make loads of appeal to me as a betting race, I think that's the way to approach it, is look for something that could jump out of the ground improvement wise and I think all the potential is there for Entitled to do that.
Okay, so is that going to be your final selection, Kevin Blake, or is there something else that you would like to discuss?
No, Entitled was very much on my short list. Altair is probably going to run here for Joseph. Not in a dissimilar profile to Entitled, and doesn't have the same weight of pedigree behind her, but I think it's fair to say she's improving with each start. And while she was quite workmanlike in winning at Goran last time, I think she got away with the trip that day. She's crying out for further. And while she does need to take a fairly hefty step up to compete in a race like this, I think there's great scope for her there to take a good step forward over this longer trip. Fast ground will suit her well, and you know she'll be a wild sort of price. So if you wanted a kind of a chancy one at a big price, she could be an option. But in the main, this isn't a race now to set me alight. I think it's ripe for something to jump out of the ground and go and win, but there's plenty of unexposed fillies here with big pedigrees and all the potential to do so. It's just a case of sorting out which one you prefer to do it.
Yeah, and talking of pedigrees, just to go back to you, Peter, it was entitled that really interested me. She's never, almost certainly never going to reach the lofty heights of her former stable companion and half-sister. But crucially, she skipped the Oaks at Epsom, and that tends to be, I know that it has now been done, but it still tends to be overall a good thing to have not raced at Epsom to come here that little bit fresher. And the 8-1 is more than fair in my eyes.
So we all agree. I mean, that's kind of amazing.
There we go. We'll take that.
Done. Solved. The Ribblesdale is solved. We're going and smashing into Entitled. So at 8-1. To get the job done, and not quite following in her sister's footsteps, but some way along the way, Royal Ascot win.
You'd have to say it maybe doesn't look the strongest Ribblesdale you'd ever see.
That's what I was going to say, Kev. Like, if Pink Dogwood is being rerouted to the Pretty Polly, that's what Aidan O'Brien told you for AtTheRaces.com. So when you take out the front two from the Oaks, because Annapurna goes to France later in the season, she's on break. Queen Power sets the market, and I'm not overly taken with her. Again, cue her winning by 5 lengths now, but I'd be happy to take her on.
Does Medea run? I see she's not priced up by all the bookmakers. Medea.
There was a chance, but my inkling from what John Gosden got, if we try and interpret the great man, was that he wasn't going to run her.
Yeah, like, it looks to me now, like, if she doesn't run, you've Manuel de Vega, who ran quite well in the Oaks, but like, you have Queen Power there, who's rated 100 as your fav, and like, you see, I know clearly she's open to more improvement, but it seems to be in the main like a lot of kind of 100 to 105 fillies with the potential to improve, rather than something like Pink Dogwood, who's coming in with a real strong piece of recent form that you can hang your hat on. You know, Manuel de Vega is probably the pick in that regard, but yeah, it's just as Ribblesdale's go now, it just wouldn't be one. You know, of course, one of these fillies, like we were saying, with so many unexposed fillies in there that could jump out of the ground, and we could come away from it thinking it was a good Ribblesdale, but going into it, based on the evidence we have in front of us, it maybe doesn't look a vintage renewal.
Yeah, and Entitled is she's a very inexperienced horse. She's very lightly raced. We still don't know what there is to come, but she's been second in an Oaks trial. I'd be more than happy to go with her. I think that she's a very, very interesting runner for John Gosden, and you would imagine that she will be considerably shorter on the day. Which brings us, gentlemen, to the feature race, not just of the day, but the feature race of the entire week. The Ascot Gold Cup, what should be known as the Gold Cup. There we go. The Gold Cup, 4:20 on Sky Sports Racing, over 2 miles, 3 furlongs, and 210 yards. To be absolutely precise about it, your favourite is, of course, John Gosden's Stradivarius, with Frankie Dettori in the saddle yet again. The defending champion is a general 6-4 shot. We've then got Godolphin's Cross Counter at 9-2, DXB 6-1, Kew Gardens for Aidan O'Brien, having run a storming race in the Coronation Cup 6-1, and then a number of his horses. It looks as though Southern France will be going for the Hardwick Stakes, and Capri, a 20-1 shot for Aidan as well. Kevin, we'll begin with you. Stradivarius obviously sets an incredibly lofty standard. He was the winner of the Staying Million last year, and he's come out and already won the first leg for that. He sets a very, very lofty standard, and it was a strong race last year, and he came out on top. Is he one that you want to take on?
You say lofty standard. Like, he's clearly the best stayer around, and he's proven over the course and distance, but I don't know if he's like one of the best stayers we've seen in the last 20 years or anything like that. You know, he's a horse that does enough and probably not much more. And it's a case of, where do you believe there is more in the locker there if required? The thing you'd say is, he won the Gold Cup last year in very gritty fashion. He's thus proven over what is quite a unique course and distance in terms of the test that it presents. But what you'd also say is, last year, Order of St. George wasn't himself. Maybe it wasn't the strongest Gold Cup in behind him that we've ever seen. And on paper, this year's renewal looks stronger. And you could say quite a bit stronger. So his reappearance was grand. No better than that for me. You can be sure John Gosden would have left a bit to work on there to get him forward and close to peak condition for this. So you couldn't rule out him doing even better here. But I just... You can kind of sense I'm probably wanting to throw stones at him, but it's hard enough to find a big enough one to really try and knock him out with. My inclination is, rather than just talking him down, I'm just going to go fishy for some an each way alternative to him. And if he goes and wins, so be it. Hopefully my dad will finish second to him. But it just wouldn't be a shock to me if he was beaten. And I'm happy enough to go fish around and try and find a sneaky one.
Is the fishy horse you're going to go for a Capri?
Sure, look, anyone that was listening to the pod a few months ago will know that he was my fancy for the race coming into the season. But, oh God, you'd be fairly depressed now with his two runs this season. But yeah, you'd always forgive his comeback run because, you know, Aidan has been fairly straight in saying that, you know, he's a big gross horse and he was expecting him to need that first run quite badly. He's shaped that way, but he came out to a listed race at Leopardstown after that and he was odds on, and you really wanted to see him go and win if he was going to win a Gold Cup. And not only did he not win, you know, he was pretty disappointing now. Didn't improve really from his return. Well beaten third. Aidan is quite encouragingly, I suppose, keeping him very much on this track. He never seems to have wavered in his view that he was a Gold Cup horse. But this will be some training job now to get him to peak and run to, you know, his 120 best in a Gold Cup based on the preparation he's had. So I can't retain faith in him, to be honest. And you look at the rest, the Kew Gardens, they've kind of rerouted him down this path, having kind of been inclined to keep him to a mile and a half prior to his latest run, where he was maybe a shade unlucky not to win a Coronation Cup. But look, he won a Ledger. He clearly stays well. Will he stay this well? You never really know until you have a go, but he seems a good candidate to have a shot at it, and comes into this race in far better form than Capri. So he has to be respected. But just and hold fire now, lads and ladies, until the decks, because he's not a certain runner. But if Falcon 8 ran, he'd be interesting, you know.
Oh, the master, Dermot Weld.
Yeah, I saw some quotes there from Connections saying that, you know, they're kind of 50-50 at the minute whether to let him take his chance. But you know, as we're saying, look, the Gold Cup is such a unique test, it would be hard to be bullish about one really relishing it before you see them try it. But this fella looks as slow as a funeral. He looks like a real stayer, always has. And, you know, his run at Leopardstown last time, he finished, you know, well in front of Capri. And you wouldn't have fancied him finishing in front of anything kind of with four furlongs to run. But it's just his nature. He comes off the bridle a long way out and finishes off very strongly. And you could see him really relishing the Gold Cup test. He's improved with every single start. You know, he should be okay on the ground. And I'd love to see him take his chance because I think he's a really, really strong stayer. There's pretty much no other race like the Gold Cup in terms of a stamina test. So I'd love to see him given the opportunity to go and show what he can do in it. He's a wild old price. He's very much under the radar. He isn't a horse that would have come to loads of people's attention, I don't think, in terms of in the context of Group 1 racing. And yeah, like if he lined up, I think he'd be a super each way alternative to the Fav.
And he's by Galileo, so you know he's going to be teak tough as well, Kev. But it's just a matter of
He's a three parts brother to Free Eagle.
Yes, he is, which of course Dermot Weld absolutely loved, and Pat Smullen has been supporting quite a bit in his new life, which we wish him well, and we'll be speaking to him soon in the podcast. But he's a fascinating runner. He's very inexperienced, you could say. There's probably a lot more to come, and on at the races right now, I can see he's 25-1. So,
hi-oh.
Nice old shooting there. In terms of a guaranteed runner, Kev, who would you be siding with?
Like, I've nothing against Cross Counter, really. You know, you'd have to be very impressed with what he did in the Melbourne Cup. He made somewhat hard work of it out in Dubai there in the Dubai, what's it called? The Dubai Gold Cup.
Yes.
But, like, he's solid. He's been trained for this race, one would imagine. You know, again, you can't be sure he'd stay, but, you know, the strength with which he finished the Melbourne Cup, you'd be very hopeful. And he kind of grounded out over 2 miles at Maidan, so you'd be pretty hopeful he'd stay. Ground won't be a problem. He's a very classy horse. Like, he whomped the likes of DXB last year over shorter trips. You know, he's a pretty high level performer, and you know, I think he wouldn't. Like, there's a couple of solid ones against Stradivarius, and our cross counter would be one, but I'd consider him very solid. DXB is a lovely, likable horse, shapes like a real stayer in the making, and has been impressive, particularly last time. I thought he grounded out very well at Sandown. So, like, he's got solid opposition, Stradivarius. He really does. And, you know, but probably rather than going down the road of cross counter DXB or Kew Gardens, I'm just inclined to take an even bigger swing. You know, because I wouldn't throw too many stones at any of those three alternatives to the Fav, but I just want a bigger bang for me buck. And Falcon 8 is at the price he is, kind of represents that bang.
Kev, as a race planner breeder at the age of 5, Stradivarius is now. So we've seen some mighty horses in this race, and I strongly recommend that you read about one of my favorite flat horses of all time, Yates. Beautiful piece done for attheraces.com and the Royal Ascot mega site by our friend and colleague Rory DeLarghi. It's well worth reading just to take a trip down memory lane. But it was quite difficult for Aidan O'Brien to achieve what he did with him. At the age of 5, being a full horse, having had a very busy campaign last year, and when you consider what he had to go and do, and then to go and do that, when he's a 13-8 shot, you know, as a 4-year-old last year, he was 7-4 favorite, but he's going to be 6-4, 5-4 on the day, probably. Does that doubt come into your mind about going back to Ascot on good ground over 2 mile 4? Yeah, he's done it before, but God, he had a lot last year. Is he going to really want to go through that pain barrier again?
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. You know, Yates made it look easy, but that was probably one of, if not Aidan O'Brien's finest training achievements of his career. You know, that was not easy. It was made look easy, but you know, that horse was 2 steps away from a Savage in the latter part of his career. You know, he was a very hardy horse to deal with. And it was a big, big effort to get him to come back again and again and retain his enthusiasm. And, you know, to be fair, since then, like, we've had a couple of false dawns, haven't we? Fame and Glory.
Well,
when he won the Gold Cup, you know, we thought, there you go, he's going to win 5 Gold Cups.
Yeah.
And, of course, he never won another.
He was odds on the year he was beaten by Colorvision, and he was hammered. And he's passed away since as a stallion, and he's very much in demand as a jump stallion. But
He's dead now. He's not the man anymore.
Exactly. But his progeny that is on the ground is in demand, and it's a shame that he was only 11 when he died, which is a real shame. But he went through the pain barrier that day. He only won another 2 races afterwards, and he had a number of them, and he was never the same. That really took it out of him.
Yeah, it's tough, but to be fair to Stradivarius, like, there was nothing in his return to say that there's an issue in that regard. But you know, the Gold Cup is just another step on again, and when you have to really go into the red zone, that's when you find out. So it's a variable. It's something you have to consider, but based on York, I don't think it's something you could weight too heavily, I think, at this stage.
Leading Light's another one. Like, he won and then ended up picking up an injury and never raced again. He is standing at stud. But Order of St. George, obviously, you know, winner and then not quite the same afterwards. It's an interesting one. If he does it, he's got the heart of a lion and he's an absolute superstar. Peter, when you look at this race, it's got a proper international feel. We don't have a Vizierabad, but we do have the Melbourne Cup winner in cross counter. He would have been fascinating in the St. Ledger last season, but wasn't qualified to run being a gelding. So Melbourne was on the agenda. He won. He's gone to Dubai for his owners, and as Kevin said, wasn't impressive, but he's still gone and won. Beautiful pedigree out of a King Mambo mare by a Teofilio. He'd be my idea of the each way play here. The scumbag each way bet would be cross counter for me. For you, how do you want to play the Gold Cup?
I get it. I get what you're saying. I really like Falcon 8 as a long shot. I think I like Kew Gardens more than you guys do, based on the strong form from last season and the form this year. I mean, the first race easily excused, and then Kevin alluded to the Coronation Cup being very impressive. And when you look at it on the clock, came home those last 3 furlongs faster than anybody. So to me, I'm looking at one who should improve for the third race of the season, should improve, I think, for the distance. I'm pretty interested at the price, and I think that you're going to be getting value because there are so many other ways to go. Kew Gardens is the one for me of those at the top of the market. Again, like you guys have nailed it with Stradivarius. You can't really, what can you say against a horse that wins every time, but I just don't think is going to represent any value. Cross Counter is a really good, tough horse, but so much name recognition. I'm not sure there's going to be enough in the way of price. And I'll throw one other potential long shot in here if he shows up. Called to the Bar has some interesting form over in France, and I'm assuming it's just going to be a huge number and feels like one that should go well on the ground, and the distance isn't a problem, and might just be a huge number to mess around if you don't want to go into if you want to go above the single digits here, which I wouldn't blame anybody for wanting to do.
A Son of Henry the Navigator running over 2 mile four. A 1 mile Royal Ascot winner running over 2 mile four. It's an interesting shout, and he's got some very smart form, as you say, in France. You can watch all that back on attheraces.com. He's very, very interesting. Very, very interesting. Are we giving any chance to Magic Circle, Kev?
You couldn't ignore him. He's a very talented horse, but wasn't on my shortlist.
And just finally, have you and I not paid enough respect to Kew Gardens? I'm kind of a bit thrown.
You clearly fancy him. Just back him if you fancy him. I don't mind.
No, I'm kind of thrown by him because I had in my head start of the season that he was going to be a King George horse. And in my view, Hayley Moore, turn off the podcast. Ryan really should have won the Coronation Cup. Like, the more you look it back, I think he just got caught. He had to go out on the outside and things didn't fall to plan. But he's the winner of that race in my mind. He's the better horse. And it just seems like an extreme reaction to go up in this distance. This didn't seem to be the way they were thinking initially. Capri was the Gold Cup horse, and now that's all been thrown out the window and they turn up here. Like, am I wrong about that? Was the Cups on the agenda for him, or were they determined to go mile four with him?
Mile four seemed to be the plan at the very outset of the season, but he's a Ledger winner. So the option of going up and trip was always there if a mile four didn't work out. And ultimately, as well as he ran last time, he's been beaten twice. So it isn't a shock that they've kind of changed tack. That's it. Look, and he looks a strong candidate, to be fair, but it's just an unknown until we see him over the trip.
Make room, Peter. I'm joining you on the Kew Gardens train. final selections for the Ascot, for the Gold Cup at Ascot. Peter.
Give me Kew Gardens.
I'll take a bit of Kew Gardens as well. In a reverse forecast with Cross Counter. Screw you, Frankie. Kev.
Falcon 8 at 800 to 1.
Happy days. Go on to Betfair. Ask for 800s and see does some poor sod end up emptying
you might account. You might get matched if he doesn't run.
That feckin' Kevin Blake.
If you do get matched, you know you're in trouble.
That feckin' Kevin Blake. Right, a couple of races to touch on, the handicaps towards the end, lads. Anything that interests you there? Anything on the short list, Kev?
We don't have entries yet, but the Britannia, a horse I'd love to see in there is Awe, trained by Willem Haggis. And I saw him win at Newmarket there last week, and he's a horse I've been following. He's always looked like one with an awful lot of ability, and he's a big raw horse that has just taken time to kind of put it together. He was very heavily fancied for the Silver Bowl at Haydock a few starts back, and I saw him there that day and kind of fell in love with him physically, and everything went wrong. He got completely smashed up in the early stages. It went totally wrong, and he still ran quite well considering. And then they dropped him back to 7 at Newmarket. I fancied him there and things went wrong. I think he's a horse that wants loads of pace in front of him to get covered up, to help him to relax and be delivered quite late. He got no cover. He was in front way too soon and he still won anyway in a good competitive field. He got £6, which he needed to get in typically a Britannia 90. Well, I say typically in the last couple of years, 90 would get you in. He was rated 88, so he needed to run very, very well or win. And he duly won by a length. So he's off. He's going to get in and barring something very odd happens. And a mile at Ascot, loads of pace, loads of cover, big galloping track where he can use his big action. I think it will show him to really good effect. And It wouldn't be a surprise if he can take another good chunk of a step forward. And yeah, I think he's kind of 14, 16 to 1, and that would do for me. I just hope he's entered, because the one small concern you'd have, I suppose, is that it's coming a little bit quick. He's had three runs in the last month already, so he's being busy.
As long as this doesn't come too quickly, you'd be quite keen on him, and hopefully he does get the entry. Peter, anything on your list from the ATR tracker?
Yeah, as you've probably noticed, when I get into these handicaps, I get a little bit out of my depth, but then it becomes a case of it's not what you know, it's who you know. So I did put a little shout out to my friend Rob Dove, one of the top 10 pro punters in the UK today, man who loves his sectionals, and he did have one for the Britannia. He mentioned migration as one who the trainer's great at bringing the handicappers along through the season, and one that did well to win off a slowish pace last time from the rear. So I'm going to go ahead and stick with Dove and migration in the Britannia, taking notes of Kevin's thoughts as well.
Mr. Dove's hard work gets stolen, put on the final furlong podcast by our main man, Peter T. Fornatal, but at least he name checks. I quite like that. I like that indeed. Let's get stuck in. I'm going to go with you in terms of best bets and get stuck into Wesley Ward in the opening race in the Norfolk. I'm sold, Peter T. Fornatal. I'm sold, my friend. In terms of your best bet for the day, is it that as well? Are you going with Wesley Ward?
I really do like that Ward runner, and I will be betting Maven, but if you make me pick one on the day, I think Entitle, if she can only carry the extra weight on her back of the three of us, the Ribblesdale should be within the sights.
Kevin Blake?
Bombproof in the Norfolk. Boom, boom.
Ooh, the fond farewell for Jeremy Nasita. And obviously, Entitle has got to go in there as well. I think you've probably got a lucky 31, lucky 15, lucky 69 that you can get stuck into there if you would like from our selections. Every race live on Sky Sports Racing. You can get all the information that you require on attheraces.com, including the fantastic race cards that the team have, and plenty of brilliant previews as well along the way, all on the Ascot mega site or on At The Races itself. That's day three, done and dusted. Peter T. Fornatal, I'll be watching you on Sky Sports Racing, pumped to the eyeballs, full of painkillers, and doing some radio work. Enjoy it, my man, and have as many pins as you possibly can.
Not till the camera gets shut off at the end of the day. I think that's going to be my rule for self-control. But yeah, really looking forward to seeing people out there. And if you're a Final Furlong listener and you happen to see me wandering about, please come and say hello. Always a pleasure to spend time with you guys, and happy to return the favor and have you guys as part of my Royal Ascot Monster Pod, we're calling it, for my show, the In the Money Players Podcast. Thanks, guys, very much.
I'm looking forward to that cameo as well, which you can hear on Apple Podcasts and wherever you listen to your podcast app. Kevin and I make a cameo appearance on the show. Kevin, you're there for all 5 days, but crucially, you're back with me to preview days 4 and days 5. So we will talk to you a little bit later on, my friend.
Good luck.
Listen to all the previews on your podcast app. Rate and subscribe if you wouldn't mind as well. And thank you very much for listening. We'll talk to you soon. God bless.
Have you downloaded the free At The Races app yet? With easy-to-use race cards and form, expert daily tips, plus video replays and in-app betting, it's the app that no racing fan's phone should be without. Available for free on your iPhone or Android mobile, visit attheraces.com/app for more details.